On today's episode of The Good Word, BJ Armstrong joins me to discuss everything from the first weekend of the NBA playoffs, the Warriors and Rockets, the Timberwolves and Lakers, the Pistons hitting Broadway, and the Clippers and Nuggets. And we get to talk about Nico Harrison and Scott Perry joining the Sacramento Kings. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business to get into before we get into today's show. If you haven't already, please check out The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube. Make sure you leave us a rating or review wherever you are listening to this audio podcast. Today's guest, my man BJ Armstrong. BJ is an NBA agent, of course, a three-time NBA champion, a friend of the show, and most importantly, you see my man wearing that Détroit gear on there. What's going on, B?
Oh, Vinny, it's all is good. You know, all is well. Only terrific, as I like to say. And it's always good to see you. You're a feller Detroit native, Detroit's finest right here. You know, what up, though? We have to say that.
We got to say that.
So, thanks for having me on.
No, it's good to have you on. BJ is a kingmaker. I don't know if y'all know. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But, BJ, it looked like the Rockets were this inexperienced team that could not score against the veteran team that knows how to win. Like, they played the game, by and large, I felt like, on Houston's terms. It was a low-scoring game. Houston just didn't have enough offense. Like, if you want to keep a game 95-85, that spells much better for the Rockets than the Warriors long-term. It's just that the Rockets could not score, and the Warriors got Stephen Curry and Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I thought overall, you know, if you would have told me that the Rockets were going to have, you know, they were going to hold the Warriors to under 100 points. You're going to have only, what, I think a couple guys scored in double figures. Or two or three guys scored in double figures. 95 points. And you were going to lose by 10. I would have been like, no way. There was just no way possible. The inexperience of the Rockets showed up last night. And, you know, and I'm saying this because you have these type of things happen all the time. You go through the growing pains of being a young team. And this is one of the, you know, one of the experiences that you have. And we saw it and we witnessed it last night. You hold a team to 95 points. Steph Curry makes incredible shots. Okay, let's make this clear. Like, that's not normal. People making shots like that.
Right.
Okay. I don't expect him, I probably shouldn't say this, but I don't expect him to make 100% of those shots that he made. No, he may make 90% of them, but I don't expect him to make them all.
Right.
If you're telling me you play this bad, you were awful. I think they had, 19 or 20-something turnovers last night during the course of the game.
Yeah.
You play this way offensively. Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler were terrific. You have a chance. So you should feel good about some things that you can carry into game two and moving forward. So they got this one out of their system, and they still, in spite of this, Vinny, they still had a chance to win this game. And they were awful, especially on the offensive end. Now, the one thing they're going to have to really improve on, because remember this about the Warriors. The Warriors have been the best defensive team in the league since they've acquired Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
Last night, while we're talking about holding them to 95 points, they held the Houston Rockets to 85 points.
Yep.
Okay. So now they're playing with a form. They're talking about the Golden State Warriors, in which they don't have to play well on the offensive end, and they can still grind out a game and win. Very positive for them to do this on the road. So mission accomplished from a veteran team. They came there. They got one. Now they have an opportunity to get two. But more importantly, now the Houston Rockets have to figure out how to play as a team on the offensive end, because the Golden State Warriors have shown now that they are an elite defensive team in the playoffs. Ball movement, player movement, they should be hammering that in the next couple of days. how to get the defense to move from the strong side to the weak side so that they can get easier uncontested shots. They do that and hold this team to 95 points. They should be able to win and recapture home court advantage, but it's going to be difficult moving forward.
B, there were a lot of things that I saw that were alarming for Houston yesterday. Jalen Green, okay. Fred VanVleet, you can't have your starting guards go 4 for 19, 3 for 15. You mentioned the turnovers, 16 turnovers last night.
16, yep, is that right?
You shoot 20% from three. You shoot under 40% from the field. So much of that is Golden State's defense, right? A little bit of that is the inexperience, but you mentioned it. BJ, their defense with you can put as much as you can put Steph at the point of attack and maybe try to exploit him, but everybody runs pick and rolls. You wind up switching a lot. You can have Jimmy at the point of attack. You can have Draymond at the point of attack. You can have Draymond at the rim. There's only so many ways that I think Houston can actually score in this series in the half court. They're going to have to force a lot of turnovers. They're going to have to get out in the open floor a lot. Like, this is the fear if you are the Houston Rockets. Like, be there, and I'm sure you can agree with me on this one. There's ways you can win in the 82 games that you cannot win in seven. There's ways that you can win in a one-off regular season sort of setting when you're playing 3 and 4 nights and I'm just playing harder than you. Mm-hmm. And we got better athletes than you, that generally you cannot win in a seven-game series when I'm locking in on everything that you do, and it's so much about who can get a shot. There isn't anybody next to Alperen Sengun that I would trust, oh, yeah, you're going to get a shot for me on Houston, and you're going to get a shot, a high-quality shot, against that type of defense. Like, the formula for Golden State is not Stephen Curry going for 40. The formula is, let's lock you down and we'll have just enough offense to beat you.
When you're playing with the Golden State Warriors, like the Warriors did last night, the Warriors have a lockdown defense. However, they're very small. There are some things that the Houston Rockets can point to. I think the Houston Rockets had 22 offensive rebounds last night. Okay. They went to a bigger lineup with, what's the big kid? Steven Adams and Sengun. Okay. They know that they can get to the offensive glass in rebound. It's going to be very hard to win consistently giving up 22 offensive rebounds. So there are some things that happen during the course of the game that you can point to on both sides of the ball that you should feel really good about. However, the Warriors are going to have to clean that up. And I expect them to shoot better. What, they were like 6 for 29 or 6 for 30 or something from three. So they're going to do better. They're going to get better from there. The Warriors, on the other hand, really executed their offensive schemes much better. And it always looks better when you make shots. I mean, Steph Curry made a couple shots that were just like, I mean, they were deflating. Okay, they just deflated you, right? You play good defense for 23 seconds of the shot clock, and then he looks like a heave, but it's not a heave. That's what he do. I mean, that's what he does. He's going to make those shots. You have to live with those shots. You cannot get, you know, sidetracked when you're playing against a great player, because a great player is going to be great. Now, if there's anything I would say to the Rockets is you have to move the ball, because the Warriors are going to take away the first and second option of your offense. Now, they're going to have to play collectively as a group. If there's anything that I can say to them, the Warriors are phenomenal. Draymond Green can anchor a defense. Now, if there's anything you can say, the Warriors are going to anchor. So you're not going to be able to pick on Steph Curry. You're not going to be able to pick on anyone on their team. Draymond is going to show up, and you're going to have to be disciplined to play against this Warriors team. And Jimmy Butler played great. I mean, when you think about this, Jimmy Butler was the power forward last night, and Draymond Green was the center.
Yep.
Okay. And then they plug in the other guys, especially on the defensive end. So give those guys credit. It was a very nice win for them. One I'm sure they feel real good about, but they know their work is not cut out. You know, they know their work is not done. They have a lot of work ahead of them to do with this group. This Houston Rockets team is a very good team. They have some good young players. Jalen Green and those guys did not play well last night. The Thompson, Amen, did not play well. No one played well other than Sengun. So I expect them to be better, and hopefully this series will go deep. Because I want to see how good this Houston Rockets team really is, right? I think they finished second, right? They finished second in the conference. Mm-hmm. So, but great win for the Warriors. I give those guys credit, and, you know, at their age, they're still battling, so I respect that.
I picked the Warriors to win this series for the very reasons that the Rockets lost last night. Not enough shot making. A little on the naive side. And when you win a game one on the road, that boosts your confidence as a veteran team in ways that it's hard to quantify. Now they smell blood. Now Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry and Draymond Green smell blood. And these are two guys, I need to say this, Draymond and Amen Thompson were on my Defensive Player of the Year ballot. Like, those were two of the three guys on my Defensive Player of the Year ballot. And I think Amen Thompson is going to win multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards. I think he is that special. But at the same time, this is his first time going through this. And you're going through an experienced team that is going to test you a little bit. It's going to confuse you a little bit. So with that said, B, I'm in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers in Minnesota.
Right.
Saturday night. And a lot of people said that building was quiet. That building was not quiet. That building was nervous. That building was shook, BJ. Shook, I tell you, because some things are very obvious to me. And I want to see where you go with me on this one. In the first quarter of Lakers-Minnesota, Luka Doncic was magnificent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But nobody else touched the ball. Nobody else was in rhythm. It's not to say that Luka was in ball hog mode, but nobody else was really able to do anything. And you're just like, hey, Luka, you killing your matchup, do your matchup. But Minnesota didn't flinch. They didn't overreact. They didn't overhelp. And I was like, oh, this is a mature game plan from this team. Like, I didn't expect them, BJ, to play as disciplined of a basketball game as the Minnesota Timberwolves played. Like, that might have been, and people might disagree with me on this one, BJ, that was the most mature game I've ever seen Anthony Edwards play. He didn't force his own action. He didn't force, you know, getting down the lane against several bodies. When it was there, he took it. But BJ, he played, he took what the defense gave him. You guys are going to hedge and help over way too much. There's Naz Reid for you. There's Jaden McDaniels for you. Like, he played a mature game, and I think the Lakers have some, they got some real problems here, BJ. This is not just as simple as we're going to win game two because we're at the crib.
Yeah, you know, give Minnesota credit. And first of all, they came out and played the game with a level of physicality, I think, kind of surprised the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
They played, you know, Julius Randle in particular. He really came and, you know, brought back it looked like the previous generation, the way the entire playoffs has really been being refereed here, but in particular in this game. So that was the first thing. The second thing, when you're making shots, Vinny, I think they shot like 50% from three.
Yeah.
You know, when you're making shots, that helps. Okay. That means you're able to get your defense back and you're playing five against five. I don't expect them to shoot 50% from three for the entire series. But Anthony Edwards, as you mentioned, he was sensational. He really was. He played well. He played with composure. He was poised. And he came out there and he did what a superstar is supposed to do. I mean, he really carried them, especially in the second half. He was hands down the best player on the floor. Now, what stood out to me about the Lakers is the Lakers was their inability to get everyone involved. I think the leading assist total was like three.
Yeah, they only had they had 10 when it wasn't garbage time. Okay. They finished with 15, but they had 10 in the throes of the game.
I mean, think about that. You have LeBron James, okay, you have Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, and all these guys. And I think the leading person for the night was three. Luka had like 36, 37 points, but he only had one assist.
Yeah.
Okay. So the game plan should be, if we can get Luka to score, now we can control the flow of the offense. All right. On the other hand, you take Minnesota, you look at the box score, you say, well, Anthony Edwards, did he really play well? Yeah, he had like 22 points. But then you had like Naz Reid had like 22 or 23 points off the bench. Okay. So we know the importance of moving the ball around, and you want to have a balance of, you know, when I'm double teamed, we must find the open man. So ball movement equals player movement. And that's the big thing that you have to come to realize if you're going to advance in the playoffs. So I'm looking for the Lakers to play much better on the defensive end. I'm looking for them to raise their level of physicality to meet the where the game is going to be played at. And then they're going to have to figure out how to incorporate, involve everyone on the offensive end. Luka Doncic, if you're telling me you're going to hold him to one, two, or three assists, I feel really good about my chances if I'm Minnesota. Okay, so give Minnesota credit. They had a terrific game plan, but they made shots. I don't know if they're going to shoot this well, right, but certainly they brought a level of energy that kind of hit the Lakers off guard. I thought the Lakers didn't match the energy of the game. That was the only thing that I'm of concern if I'm Coach Redick, is that you want your team to meet that. And I don't know if they can meet the energy of Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards. McDaniels led him in scoring. Think about it. Your third, fourth option had like 22, 23 points. Naz Reid comes off the bench, gets two, 22 or 23 points. DiVincenzo came off. So they were great. But I'm really looking for that, Vinny, for to see if they're going to meet the energy of the game. And I think that's going to be important for them if they're going to be able to advance or win four games in this series.
BJ, they're a tougher team. Like it doesn't mean that you're better. It doesn't mean that you're going to win the series. They are a tougher team. And that's even with, remember, Rudy Gobert got played off the floor. He was in foul trouble. He came out a lot earlier than even J.J. Redick anticipated. Like his substitution patterns, I think, were going to be predicated off of how Minnesota played in the regular season. And he said it. They didn't follow the patterns that we thought they were going to follow. So Chris Finch threw a wrinkle in the game plan. Julius Randle, who is trick-or-treat for me. There's a toughness that he plays with, and there's also a, man, is he going to do something crazy? Is he going to, like, gum up the game in some way? And he has seven turnovers, BJ, and it didn't hurt him.
Right.
You know what I mean? He got into it with LeBron, got into it with Vanderbilt. Like, he was, in terms of, like you said, the physicality, he was the one throwing his shoulder into those dudes. And that's where, also, you look at LeBron James, and I'm like, LeBron doesn't look right. He doesn't look fully healthy. And maybe that's old. That could be old and not healthy.
You know, at his age, I've said this for years now, just give me what you have. You know, we have such fond memories, and we have a ton of memories of LeBron and what LeBron has done. And those are great memories. But we must remember where he's at currently. LeBron is, what, 40 years old, okay? Mm-hmm. As a 40-year-old, you're going to have some good nights that you're going to feel good, and you're going to have some ones where, you know, you're pushing it, but it doesn't move quite the way it used to. These young people, Anthony Edwards, these people are like, you know, it always reminds me of the first time I played against Allen Iverson. That's when I knew I was old. Okay. You know, and it's to be expected. It's to be expected. However, you know, Vinny, the glaring thing about the game since the playoffs have begun, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Vinny, it looks and appears to be that the game is being refereed different than it was in the regular season.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, I know playoffs, it'll be a little different. You know, it's always a little different, but it's glaring. Like, when you watch the games now, I mean, the level of physicality, it reminds me of, like, the 80s and the 90s. The physical presence that people are playing with on the floor. That to me is what caught the Lakers off guard. There was no more flopping. There was no more bailouts. There was hand checking, impeding progress. The game looks as if the referees are saying, no, we want, and I just been calling it this. We want the competitive conflict to reemerge back into the game. Okay? That's what it looks like to me. I don't have the numbers to support that.
Right.
But if I'm playing the game, I have to play the game, especially on the defensive end, a different way. The Lakers, in particular, did not have a presence with their bigs. Now, if there's any position to me that has reemerged, if you will, from the grave, it's been the center position. If you don't have a big that's going to come there and play with a certain level of physicality in the game, you have no chance. That's what it looks like to be. Okay, when you start looking at, you know, when you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, when you look at Minnesota, Jokic, by the way, the Clippers were fantastic. Al Horford.
We're going to talk about them. Yeah.
When you look at all the teams, you're saying, I need a big guy now. And if you don't have that big guy, and that's what was missing from the Lakers, who's going to be that big guy that's going to set the tone for them? Because Julius Randle was the most physical person on the floor. Draymond Green he set the tone. And you can go on and on as you're watching these games. So if there's one thing that is apparent to me, and I wish I had the numbers in front of me, I bet they're calling less fouls than I've seen in the last 15 to 20 years. The referees, they look as if they're saying, hey, guys, we're going to let you play. And I want to see the Lakers bring that. I want to see LeBron bring that. Luka. Because I saw a lot of times Luke and them were looking for the fouls that maybe he would have gotten called, and he didn't get those. So that is what I'm looking for. And the teams who adjusted to that style of play were the more victorious teams. And so we'll see. I loved it. The Clippers series, to me, the Clippers and the Denver, one of the best games I've seen.
Yeah, by far.
And for sure, this season, and one of the best games I've seen probably in the last 4 or 5 years. It was a very well played game. The bigs were terrific. The defensive schemes, the coaching. I just thought it was an excellent game. So I'm really enjoying this year's playoffs because of the physicality of the game. I mean, these guys are playing hard, and there's a lot of fouls, and I really like it.
Okay, I'm going to make a point to BJ, but I'm going to make it after the break. Because after the break, we're going to talk about the Clippers and the Nuggets, that fantastic game one. We're going to talk about Detroit going to Broadway, dealing with the New York Knicks, and doing something that I completely expected. We're going to talk about that on the other side. Back here on The Good Word with my man BJ Armstrong. BJ, from the last segment, just mentioned the physicality coming back in these playoffs. I remember when BJ played on the team that didn't like the physicality from the Detroit Pistons. And Michael Jordan went complaining to the NBA. Oh, the Pistons are too physical to me. We got to do something about this. Flagrant fouls. Gets put in the game. All of a sudden, the bad boy style gets legislated out because poor little Michael Jordan couldn't take the physical abuse. BJ, my man BJ, but
legend has it. Legend has it.
You know? Yeah, allegedly. Allegedly such things were said. BJ, you mentioned the Clippers Nuggets game. That was the hardest series for me to predict going into the playoffs because you got a Nuggets team with the best player on earth and the whole coaching situation. And then you got the Clippers, who might have been playing the best basketball of any team in the Western Conference, and a playoff coach in Ty Lue that just does stuff. And then Kawhi Leonard, who looks healthy and looks right and doesn't look like he's dragging that leg out. And Huger comes and makes the decisive plays to win the game for the Denver Nuggets in game one is Russell Westbrook. I would not, BJ, I would not have predicted that. I would have done the same exact thing that Ty Lue did. Chris Dunn, leave him open in the corner. We going to play 5-on-4. We going to play the numbers, and if he beats us, he beats us. And then he beats you. And I think you can live on those terms. I don't think you want to live with Nikola Jokic getting a 40-20 game on those terms.
Well, I think there's been a narrative about Russell Westbrook and of how effective he is in some eyes, and then there are others who say, you know, may have a contrarian opinion about the effectiveness of Russell Westbrook. But here's one thing.
What do you sit on Russ?
Well, I sit on Russ for this. This says everything about Russell. Yeah, I've been knowing, and full disclosure, I've been knowing Russell since he was in college at UCLA. Mm-hmm. And here's where I sit on Russell Westbrook. I've never seen Russell Westbrook step on a court and not give his all. Okay? I've seen Russell Westbrook as a rookie. He gave his all. I saw him prior to entering into the NBA. He gave his all. I've seen him as a max player give his all. And now I'm watching him as a minimum player. Okay? And he's given his all. I can't have an opinion about someone where they are laying it out on the field every single time they play. Now, can we talk about maybe some decisions? Okay, maybe he should have passed when he shot, or vice versa, all right? As a guard, I have an appreciation. You know, as a lead guard in this league, you have to master the art of when to shoot and when to pass.
Yep.
Okay, can we talk about that? All right, we can talk about that. That's fair. But no one can question this young man's ability to compete. Russell Westbrook is a competitor. So where do I stand with this? I love him. I love him because he contributes to the game. He's impactful to the game. He competes no matter what. No matter what, he competes. He competes on the offensive end, which most of us get the recognition for, but he competes on the defensive end. I have nothing but praise for him. He plays hard, he never cheats the game, and he lays it out on the line. And more importantly, he is not a good person, he's a great person. He's great. Ask anyone who's played with Russell, he lays it out on the line. Now, if you want to criticize some things, all right, is he the best shooter? No. Is he the best? Okay, you can say all those things. That's fine. But commitment to the game of basketball? There's nothing to discuss. Competing, conflict, lay it out on the line, all those things that we value. Yeah. And Vinny, you grew up in Detroit. He could have played for the Pistons.
Yep.
He could have played for the Bulls. He could have played in that era. He could play in this era. And you know you're going to get your money's worth when you talk about effort and maximizing who you're supposed to be. Whoever Russell was supposed to be in the NBA, he was that. And he's still, to this day, impacting the game. I applaud him and any player that will play with that level of energy. I don't care what you're doing. What can you say about him? Like, other than, hey, he shows up.
No, he plays hard.
Man.
He plays really hard. And that's not like a shot. That is a sincere compliment. He plays really hard. And it's hard to play. It's funny when I say this. It's hard to play hard all the time. You know what I mean? It's not easy to play hard, especially at that age.
I've seen this. You know, it's easy when things are going good. It's easy for you to play when things are going good. Russell, on the other hand, you know what I love about Russell? Russell, he can grind the game out. He can find different ways to impact the game. I mean, here was a guy that is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Now he's coming off the bench, and he's still impacting the game. Still at an elite level. He's still doing triple doubles. He's still finishing and closing games. You gotta love it. This is what it's all about. So, you know what? I've known this young man. I've seen this young man, and proud to say, you know, he's a friend. So I got to give him credit. I could play with him any day. And I've watched him. He loves the game. He loves it. He loves to play. He loves to compete. And he's been great for the sport. So another example of why you play. You compete. You know, you compete.
It's some things that stuck out to me, BJ. The play where he just, you know, got in James Harden's line of sight, tipped the ball off of James or whatever it was before the last possession in overtime. Like, critical play that won the game. The offensive rebounding bucket over Kawhi Leonard. Critical play. Not the fact to me that he made the corner three. The fact that Jokic, when he was doubled, didn't hesitate to throw him the ball. Like, Jokic is the best player on earth. A lot of people will feel more comfortable with Jokic shooting over two people than Russ shooting open. But he made the basketball play that is called to make. You know what I mean, BJ? He made the play easily that is called for him to make without even a thought. You know what I mean? Some people will say, oh, he's open for a reason. BJ, he passed that man the ball without hesitation. And that, I think that says a lot about Jokic and his trust with Russ as a teammate, because he knows Russ is at least going to show up.
Well, you know, a lot of times, Vinny and give Jokic credit. He did make the right play there. It was early enough in the shot clock. However, one of Jokic's, you know, he doesn't have many. He's not what we called a shot creator. Okay. He doesn't utilize his speed and quickness to get around people, right?
Right.
Especially
right.
out on the perimeter. So I give him credit for figuring out what he can and what he can't do, right? You minimize right. what you can't do. You know, he's right. not like some of these guys where, you know, if take for instance Allen Iverson, you double team him and he dribbles around you and we go right. ooh and ah. That's not Jokic's, that's not the strong suit of his game.
No.
However, he did make the right play, and Russell had the confidence to take it, right? So that was great. You gotta do the right thing at any given moment. So, but you know what? It all worked out for them, and Jokic.
This is going to be a long series, BJ.
Yeah. Oh, yes, for sure. For sure. I'm expecting the Clippers to win tonight. Because, you know, when you start playing, that was a hard-fought game. I think the Clippers have more depth than the Denver Nuggets.
By far.
And I expect the Clippers to win this game and even up this series. So, but Jokic did the right thing in that play. I mean, 9 times out of 10, he's going to do the right thing. Probably 10 times out of 10. I mean, he's phenomenal when to pass, when to shoot. But, you know, it's pretty safe to say that he's not going to dribble around
no.
double team. So,
no, he's not. He's not doing
so
that.
So I think he went to his next best option, which was to pass the ball.
Yeah, that's what. And speaking of next best options, BJ, we got to go to Broadway. We got to go to 33rd and 8th. We got to go to Penn Station. Because the Detroit Pistons played their first meaningful playoff game, by and large, in like 15 years. Well, like, let's see. Let me do the math. 17 years, right? Since the 2008 Eastern Conference Finals. And this was the matchup I was telling the Detroit Pistons staffers and coaches. This is the matchup that you want. Not because you can beat the New York Knicks, but because playing on Madison Avenue, playing the Knicks, they expose everything that you are and everything that you're not. You will find out if you are built for the stage, right? And for three quarters, BJ, they were built for the stage. For three quarters, they had it. And then Cameron Payne. Are we serious? Campaign beat you. Karl Towns, physical, tough, beat you. Jalen Brunson, twists his ankle again, goes and puts on his cape, comes back out, beat you. I would say, BJ, if I'm Detroit, I'm more encouraged than discouraged over what happened in game one, because it shows, yeah, that 21-0 run, that hurt. But you controlled tempo, you controlled pace, and you didn't look like the game was too big for you for the better part of three quarters.
Well, just remember, a year ago, Vinny, we were in a 28-game losing streak.
Yes, the Pistons. Yeah, okay. Bad.
And all of a sudden, here we are now, a year later, and we are in the playoffs in Madison Square Garden. Okay. So I'm going to put it in its proper perspective. Let's take baby steps here. As an experienced NBA person like yourself, you never want to lose an opportunity when you have a chance. That was a very winnable game.
Yes, it was.
That's one of those games that you say, ooh, we blew that one. Yep. However, I was so happy for the Pistons, because you are absolutely right, Vinny. The lights were not too bright for this group. Now, they had this gap here started by Cameron Payne. Okay, that's what we call an unexpected contribution. Mm-hmm. That's what the good teams always get, those lucky breaks. Mm-hmm. It appears to be lucky, because we're looking at the stars and we're looking over there. Yeah, Jalen Brunson did what Jalen Brunson was going to do, and Karl-Anthony Towns and da da da. But Cameron Payne, I wasn't expecting that, especially in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Okay. Now the Pistons, you have a chance. Now, they can still get accomplished what they came there to get accomplished.
I think they win a game two.
Okay.
I think they'll win a game two at Madison Square Garden.
Now, the one thing that I love about the Pistons, we talk about physicality. They are, without question, the most physical team in the NBA, and I love it. Okay. While everyone else is shooting threes, pacing space, and all these things, Coach Bickerstaff and company have said, if we're going to compete, this is how we have to play to compete in this league. And I love that. Everyone can't shoot like Steph Curry.
Right.
I understand why Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors play the way they play. But we don't have that, and we got to find our niche in how we have to play. And the New York Knicks respect that. They have the attention of the New York Knicks.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
For sure.
Now, when
for
they
sure.
go back to Detroit, it's gonna be popping there. You know, it's going to be exciting. But I like the fact that the Pistons came out with this level of aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Remember now, Durant's first time, Cade Cunningham, and many of these players, Ausar Thompson. This is their first time, and their introduction into the NBA is in Madison Square Garden. Wow.
Right.
Okay. Now, for 36 minutes, you couldn't tell me anything. I had my Pistons gear on.
Did you?
Oh, man. I was going to wear it today, but I was like, you know, I'm just going to, you know, if I have something on Detroit, you know how we do. I know you got something on Detroit.
I'm Motown. This is a Michael Jackson sweat.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
That's all it is. Yeah.
But I like the fact that the Pistons have a chance. They play a brand of basketball. I mean, Beef Stew and these guys. I mean, I don't like comparing teams, but I feel so good about the brand of basketball up there, because it fits who we are. You know, when you say the Bad Boys and you say this version of the Pistons, you're like, okay, that's us. That's how we play. That's how we all played, and that's what it is. So now they have to figure out how to close the game. The other team, this is the NBA. They're going to make a run. Brunson and these guys are going to make a run, but they have everyone's attention. And if you tell me for 36 minutes every game that Cameron Payne has to come in and do that, I'm okay with that. Cameron Payne is a good player, and you know what? Give him credit. But you know what? I'm okay with that too.
You and live on those times. You
I'll
live on those times.
I'll live on that. I'll live on that. I can accept that, but I was really happy for Detroit. because I didn't know what to really expect. And clearly, Kay Cunningham is an elite player. Okay. And Kay Cunningham, I thought his response was terrific. Duren and all of those young guys. And now it's a series. And I expect Detroit to win a few games. We get a lucky break. We get a break somewhere here. The Knicks know this. And that's what I respect. The Knicks know it. They know this. They respect that team over there. Mm-hmm. So, and now Detroit has to find a way. And, you know, they just had a little gap there, Vinny, but that's okay. That's why you play, and good lesson learned, and let's move on to game two.
Well, look, Isaiah Stewart's got some inflammation in that knee. That is a problem for them. If he can't play, hold on, did I lose? Hold on, let me see that. Yep. Hold on, B. No, yep. I think you got guys mad at me. All right, I'm gonna start that over. 3, 2. Isaiah Stewart's got a inflammation in that knee, BJ. That's a huge thing.
Right.
Because Jalen Duren, like, it looked like, I won't say the game was too big, but it looked like he wasn't able to react to the pick and rolls and everything as quick. Stu was on it. Stu and Karl Anthony Towns, that's a wrestling match. That's an old school styles make fights wrestling match. I'm going to get in your face all game. And if he can't play, if he's limited, that's a huge advantage to the Knicks. BJ, I'm with you. I think this series goes long. I think game three in Detroit on Thursday is going to be a crazy atmosphere. BJ, if you didn't live so far, I would tell you to hop on the plane.
Yes.
Go to the west side.
Yes.
You know, hop down. I will be back in Detroit for game three. I'm in LA now, but wow. I'll be there for game three. I think that's going to be a great atmosphere because now there's something to get behind. But for purposes of this series, they let a game get away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's going to eat at them a little bit. When you let a game get away on the road, right? I'm not talking about, you know, Memphis getting blown out by 50. When you let a game get away on the road, that's something that eats at you unless you win the series. And I think it's going to eat at this young team until they get to the other side. But this is a great, great, great test for them. And I look forward to seeing how they react. Especially Karl Towns, Jalen Brunson, and that whole Knicks team. Like, they're going to test you. So when we come back, it's going to be time for the last word. And I'm going to ask BJ about some executive movements around the NBA. It's time for the last word here with my man BJ Armstrong. BJ, since you were an executive with the Chicago Bulls and you're now an agent, you know this league from every single capacity. I first want to start off with Scott Perry, friend of the show, friend of my show, friend of your show, close right. personal friend of yours. Getting back in as the general manager of the Sacramento Kings, how do you think Scott is going to deal with that atmosphere in Sacramento? Because it feels like it's a lot of cooks in the kitchen there. We all know that Scott is a very diplomatic executive, but he has principles and he has values. And that is, I would say, a mess. It is a mess, but it's a talented mess that he has to clean up and figure out who stays and who goes.
Well, you know, first of all, we want to say congratulations to Scott Perry. You know, for having an opportunity once again to sit in that seat and have an opportunity to build a team and construct a team and figure out how good this organization can be. That's the first thing. You know, it's a very difficult task. Anytime you sit in that seat, because, you know, your roster construction is a real gift. And we're asking these people like Scott Perry to come in there and figure out what's going on. Clearly something is going on where they want to change. You know, they've had a change with their head coach. Now they've changed their executives. And in their eyes, they are underachieving. So now it's important for Scott to come in there, assess the situation, and then begin to strategically put together a plan to get them on the path where they want to go, which is ultimately having an opportunity to compete in this league. Everyone talks about winning. Winning is very hard, okay? But you got to put together a group based on the economic situation of your current team, mm-hmm. your draft picks that you have available, and you got to have health as well. You know, some of this, you know, is, you know, you need a little luck along the way. So Scott is great. You're not going to find a more prepared executive. He's very knowledgeable. He understands the business. Accomplished champion right there in Detroit, I believe in 04, right? Mm-hmm, when they went mm-hmm. there, they went to 6 consecutive conference finals, you know, under the guidance there of Joe Dumars and John Hammonds and all of those guys. Scott was sitting right there, played a big part of that. So Sacramento is in great hands, and Scott has amazing leadership. He will connect with those players. And if anyone can do this, it will be Scott Perry. Because of his understanding of the business, of what's going on in the league, and where it's going to go to in the future. So I'm looking forward to watching him. I'm looking forward to where he's going to take this group, what he's going to do. So I'm really excited for him and of what the future holds for the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, it's going to be curious to see how, you know, Doug Christie's interim coach. You got to figure out that. You got to figure out the power vacuum there. Who, you know, who is Scott going to be working in concert with? I'm very fascinated by all of that. Mm-hmm. Then there's the other side of this. The Dallas Mavericks. Nico Harrison. I think, and for those who don't know, Nico is he's smart. He's reasoned. He comports himself well, like he speaks with, like all that stuff. But there seems to be like some confusion, at least in how this Luka Doncic trade has been presented to the public. And they can't get in front of it in the way of public relations. They can't convince people in enough ways and in enough sentences that this is the right move for them for whatever reason. There's been stories that's come out over the past couple of days. Tim Cato and Tim McMahon of ESPN, Tim Cato of, I think, All City, Dallas, like, of the inner workings of the Nico Harrison regime. It basically sounds like to me, from, I don't know if you've read it, but I'm just going to give you an overview of it.
Right.
It seems to me that Nico saw, okay, Dirk Nowitzki had his power vacuum, like his people. Luka Doncic had his people. I want to be able to have my people. Like, how much, mm-hmm. BJ, does that play in front offices where a guy comes in and he wants to have his guys and he doesn't want the player or former player to have but so much power and sway? Like, is that one of those things where you get caught and it doesn't play to winning? It plays to power.
Well, because, you know, living out here in L.A., I was able to kind of follow this just from afar. And you know, I didn't talk to Nico during that time of the trade. I was not part of the conversation where he asked myself. Maybe he asked Benny what did
he think. No, he didn't. He did not.
I was not part of the conversation, nor did Rob Pelinka call me from the Lakers to ask me what I thought about the situation. So I'm just like everyone else. I'm just watching from afar. And then when you have a trade like this, you know, I just remember a former mentor of mine saying, when the sharks know where they can eat, they will eat in an orderly fashion. When they don't know where they're going to eat, there could be a frenzy. And what I mean by that is no one knew this was coming. So now we're all in a frenzy in the media. What happened? How did this come about? There were no leaks. I just spoke to such and such the other day. He didn't mention anything about it. So right. Now we're all forced to give our views because no one has said anything. The Lakers haven't said anything. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard the Mavericks say anything. So now we are all forced to be in a frenzy because we have to say something. Now, to me, the aftermath has been the most interesting part of this because no one knows. Being a former executive, You know, you have to be able to work in the silence. And you have to sit in that seat and take the criticism that comes with it, right? There's your private life, there's your public life. Well, this one was clearly a deal that was done in private. The people that needed to know knew. And it's very interesting to say this now, Vinny, there were no leaks.
Maybe there should have been. Maybe there should have been some leaks.
Whoever would have gotten that story first would have clearly had an unfair advantage in the business, but nothing got out. Now we're forced to say, well, should have got more. How could this happen? Who else did they talk to? No one knows anything about the deal. So that to me is what this is all about. Whatever happened, happened. There was someone knew who needed to know. We can all say whether we agree with it or disagree with it, but I can assure you this, no one knows the situation better than the people who orchestrated the deal.
For sure.
Now, they know something that we don't know, but I can only tell you what I can see from my little perspective. But they did it. And
I wouldn't have done it.
Believe it or not, there's a lot of things. And there's been a lot of trades that probably could have, should have, would have, ought to happen. Some of them did happen, like this one. Some of them didn't. But you live with it, and you know, and you move on. So I can't see the full picture, and I'm aware that I don't know everything that I need to know to even make an informed decision about it. That's the one thing that working in the front office taught me. When you draft a kid, you trade a player, you better make sure you know every aspect of this, of why you're doing it. There's some things I can't see practice. I can't see preparation. I can't see what I need to see to even have an informed decision
Other than the game. There's always more. There's always more to the story.
But why wouldn't you have made it? You're very adamant about that. Why
wouldn't I wouldn't have made the deal. Not even knowing what I know now, I just wouldn't have made the deal. Like, I understand if you think Luka Doncic is a loser. I'm not saying I think that. I think the trade signifies Nico thinks that Luka Doncic is a loser. If you're saying I have to trade him, you don't just engage with one team. And I understand why he didn't engage with engaged with one team. Because if you would start engaging with more, it gets around to the agent. The agent starts to engineer where he's going. That strips you of your leverage. But with what you got in return, it wasn't like you had leverage anyway. So that's just me. And the public relations part of it since has just made it a lot worse. That's all. And I think we're going to get more leaks and more stories and everything is because it's hard for people to understand. Like you said, you start at the end and you work back to the beginning. And that's where we are as the media trying to make sense of it all. But my man, BJ, I appreciate you for making sense of everything. The opening playoffs weekend, man. Really, really appreciate you, my brother. I'm going to have to get some sleep in L.A. before I go back home to Detroit. You have mastered this whole sleep thing. So appreciate you, my man.
All right. Appreciate you. Thanks for having me on, Vinny. And keep doing your thing.
Love it, man. Love it. Thanks to BJ Armstrong for joining us. Thanks to producer Dakota for producing today's show and everybody else that helps put this on. I'll be back later this week, probably Friday, for the next episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.